The White House published its framework today for how it intends to combat one of the most pressing national security threats, domestic terrorism. It comes nearly 6 months after pro-Trump rioters overwhelmed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Amna Nawaz reports.
That's right, Judy. It was President Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland who spoke before cameras today to roll out this 32-page strategy. Here's what he said.
During President Biden's first week in office, he directed the administration to undertake an assessment of the domestic terrorism threat and then to use that assessment to develop the national strategy being released today. In March, they concluded that domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat to the homeland in 2021. In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
Now, the strategy outlines a whole-of-government approach to the problem. It calls for better information sharing among the many agencies that are involved, calls for a broader push to short-circuit the ability of domestic extremist groups to recruit new members online, and improved screening to root out extremism within the U.S. military and law enforcement. Mary McCord previously served as the top national security official in the Justice Department. She studies and writes about these issues at Georgetown University, and she joins me now. Mary McCord, welcome back to the NewsHour. When you look at this strategy, what does it say, the size and the scope of it? What does it say to you about how this administration views domestic terrorism in 2021?
Well, I think it serves an important signaling function, first, that this administration recognizes the threat from domestic extremist violence and domestic terrorism. And that is something that has not really been seriously recognized in the previous administration. Secondly, it acknowledges that this administration is going to put that threat at the highest level and respond to it and put it in a equivalency to other terrorist threats, international terrorist threats. And that means not just a whole of government approach, but a whole of society approach. So I think those signaling functions before we even get to the meat of the strategy are very important.
We should mention that federal officials have noted the threat of domestic violent extremism before. We know in 2017, the FBI reported white supremacists posed a lethal threat. There was in 2019 a framework presented by then acting Secretary of Homeland Security Kevin McAleenan to counter violent white supremacy. When you look at the Biden strategy, what are the effective parts? What's going to make the difference this time?
Well, a strategy is just that, right? It's words on paper that, you know, establish, in this case, pillars of activity that's going to be taking place. But you're right to suggest that, you know, what's going to come from it? What does that mean is going to happen on the ground? And I think, you know, that in some ways remains to be seen, but there's already much that has happened even before the strategy was published, right? We've seen the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security announce measures to try to eliminate extremism within their ranks. We've seen more money requested for resources for combating violent extremism. So there's been already steps taken, and I think that's what we are going to see more of. There's a lot of plans in this document for things, and I think things that are so important, like more providing more information international to federal, to state, to local, and the reverse, so that there's a better coordination, there's a better understanding of the threat, and a better ability to actually counter it. I think that, you know, you're going to see actions taking place to try to reduce the impact of disinformation and other extremist rhetoric that fuels extremist violence online. You'll see efforts to undertake that. And I think we'll see just, as we're already seeing post January 6th, a real emphasis from our law enforcement agencies to combat this threat. And that is an area where they need to really be able to reach out to the communities, build trust from communities who sometimes don't trust law enforcement to be able to really be effective in this area.
Well, you know, Mary, some of that broad information sharing has raised concerns among some groups. So let me ask you about what is not in the strategy. The ACLU's National Security Project Director, Hina Shumsi, put out a response to the strategy saying, quote, the strategy includes none of the civil rights and liberty safeguards that rights group and communities of color have long sought. We know in the past, Mary, counterterrorism measures have resulted in abuse of power and over-surveillance of communities of color, Muslims in particular. Is there room in this strategy, you think, for civil rights abuses down the line?
So I think, again, the strategy is really not at the level of detail where I think we'd be seeing exactly where the vulnerabilities to abuse are and what kinds of measures need to be taken to prevent that. So I very much appreciate Hina Shamsi's comments. I do think A.G. Garland, as well in his speech today, as well as the document itself, makes clear that everything that's being proposed is being proposed to be done within, with respect to civil rights and civil liberties and constitutional values. So I think the devil will be in the details. And I think Hina Shamsi will be raising good points as we move forward and we see actual actions, policies, and, you know, potentially legislation, although not necessarily, and other actions that the Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, et cetera, that they take to implement that. That's where we really will need to be looking to see that civil rights and civil liberties are protected.
You know, Mary, all of those agencies for two decades have been focused almost exclusively on an entirely different threat, right? Mostly a foreign threat. We're talking about violent Islamist extremism. Culturally, can you get all of those systems of power to pivot? Especially when you look at, as we reported earlier, you know, we know what happened on January 6th. There were military veterans. There were law enforcement officials. There was a former member of Congress in the crowd outside the Capitol that day.
So I think that it's right that the overwhelming resources have been put toward the international terrorist threat since 9/11. But it's not as though this threat was ignored. I mean, as you noted already, Director Wray, you know, has been saying now for a couple of years, has been emphasizing the significance in terms of lethality of the domestic terrorist threat. We've seen cases brought by the FBI and the Department of Justice, not only post January 6th, but over the last few years, numerous cases brought to disrupt threats, because obviously they'd prefer to disrupt a threat before a terrorist attack happens. But you're right, that, you know, this is a much more of a mandate for change here. And I do think that the federal government, you know, has enough power and authority and Congress through oversight to ensure that directives are being implemented and that there really is a change in resources. I think getting the states and locals also on board might be even a bigger challenge, and that will need to be incentivized through potentially through some of the grants that are given from the federal government to states and locals and have some strings attached to those grants that include this type of prioritization. So I think it's going to take all of those efforts. And, you know, starting, frankly, with, you know, renewed emphasis put on vetting and screening of government employees who are in positions that sensitive positions or positions of dealing with the terrorist threat. And, you know, looking at current employees, and I'm really talking about here about our military and our law enforcement and making sure that we don't have extremists in the ranks, because even though they have First Amendment rights, they don't have a First Amendment right to be law enforcement. And extremist views, racist views, those things are incompatible with the role of law enforcement and the military. And there is leeway within our constitutional framework, courts have told us, for government employers to take action to eradicate those types of extremist viewpoints, violent, anti-government, racist viewpoints from law enforcement and the military.
That is Mary McCord, formerly of the Justice Department, now at Georgetown University. Mary, thanks for being with us. Always good to see you.